The Memory Chamber, written by Holly Cave and read by Imogen Church.
Chapter 1. First of all, I tell the dying people my name. Then I offer them a seat on the sofa next to me, and I pat the fabric in a way I hope is inviting. I do like the way I've set that up. I like the fact we are next to each other, on the same piece of furniture. At first, some of my clients find it strange to sit so close to me, but towards the end of our time together, it makes it easier to reach out and touch them, offer them reassurance. By that point, a lot of them need that silent, lingering touch. It's part of the reason I take such good care of my hands. Although, having said that, it's rare I need to use moisturiser. I sometimes joke that my hands get worn soft from all the stroking of skin. I rub one over the other, inspecting the cuticles and the pink half-moons that sit above them. One or two of my nails always seem to grow faster than the others, and the irregularity grates. I'd like to file them now, but I don't have time. I look out through the wide window of my office. My next client is approaching the front door of the clinic, along the shrub-lined pathway. August sunlight flares across his face. It casts an artificial blush of health over the hair and tissue that's fading away from life. He fits the description I have in my file. Male, 36. Only 5 years older than me, but old enough to die. How is that fair? I find that most of my clients are late, so I'm often just sitting here, ready and waiting. Despite the micromechanical vibrations of the chips in their necks, the alarm which urges them onwards to their overdue appointment, I think they find it hard to push themselves through the clinic's doors. Doing so is an admission and acceptance. Sometimes, if it's sunny, my clients will stop to look up at the building or admire the plants and flowers. Men who I can't imagine have picked up a trowel in their whole lives will pause to rub the soft fuzz of a leaf between their fingers, or will crouch down to inspect the buttercream petal of a spring primrose. Sometimes they'll decide this is the perfect moment to make the call they've put off for weeks, to tell someone they love, or someone they have loved, the news. Even though the vibrating alert from the chip in the flesh of their neck is telling them, "You're late, you're late, you're late." That's sentimentality for you. But not this man. He's tall. He walks with strength and assurance, although his head tilts to one side, as if he's listening to the voice of a sprite perched upon his shoulder. His chin is tucked in and angled towards his collarbone. Anyone would judge him as handsome, I think, although it's hard to examine his face from here. I lose sight of him as he approaches the main entrance, and I feel the familiar tumble of nervousness in my stomach. I glance down at the notes on my codex. His name is Yarrick Woods. He is dying as the result of a rare, aggressive brain tumour. I would never consider entering a room unannounced, but he doesn't knock. He is so tall, he almost has to duck to fit under the doorframe. And then I realise it's not that he's especially tall, but just that he walks that way. The tilt of his head leads the rest of his body into a slight left-leaning stoop. I've already seen his scans, so I know that this is the work of the tumour inside his brain. As I take in his broad, well-built stature, rust-coloured hair and calm green eyes, it's almost possible to forget the burden he must be bearing.